It's here and now, and we're following the latest from San Bernardino. The police chief there, Jared Burguan, said today that the names of the victims could be known soon.
Throughout the course of the day, Sheriff McMahon and the coroner's office is going to start releasing the names of the victims. We've been working throughout the night to get identity of those folks and then make notifications. So we will start to put those names out here fairly soon.
He said 21 people were wounded in the attack, four more than earlier reported, and we know that 14 were killed. The suspects allegedly fired 65 to 75 rounds of rifle ammunition during the ambush and left behind three pipe bombs connected with a remote control detonator that did not work. Yesterday's shooting left a lot of us wondering what we would do if we were confronted at a school or at work or in a theater by an active shooter. And our next guest spends his days helping people prepare for exactly that type of situation. His name is Joe Hendry. He's a lieutenant with the Kent State Police Department, an intelligence liaison with Ohio Homeland Security, and a national instructor with the Alice Training Institute, which helps people prepare for active shooter situations. He's with us from Washington. Lieutenant, welcome.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And when you saw the news of this, are you as surprised as somebody who does this for a living, who trains for this for a living? Are you as surprised as the rest of us are?
Actually, no, I wasn't. These events have been going on for quite a long period of time now. You know, the NYPD Compendium of Active Shooter Incidents, they actually began it back in 1966. So I think probably we're surprised when the incidents occur, but we probably shouldn't be. We should have been preparing since then for them.
How do you prepare? How do you train somebody to deal with a situation like this?
I think a lot of times we, for years, kind of tried to ignore it. We didn't do anything really until the early 1990s as far as preparing the civilian population for it. Law enforcement heavily relied on a SWAT response. And then when Columbine occurred, and it was concept failure of the SWAT response and quite honestly, concept failure of the civilian response, the law enforcement end of things changed. We changed to small unit tactics. That has since changed to solo engagement tactics for law enforcement. But we kind of hung on to that Columbine lockdown mindset with civilians and actually promulgated it after Columbine. And it wasn't working after the failure at several incidents, Red Lake, Minnesota. The concept failed again at Virginia Tech.
What was the concept that was failing?
The concept that was failing was we were trying to use compartmentalization as a safety measure in buildings that were not designed to utilize it. We don't build buildings in the United States to withstand gunfire. Our doors are not built that way. Our windows are not built that way. We pretty much live in a free and open society. Most of these incidents actually begin inside. It's people who belong inside the facility. And the concept that we utilized, which was called lockdown, actually utilized concepts that were developed 40 years ago for drive-by shootings. The concepts of turning off the lights, hiding, getting down on the floor, pulling drapes, those are all concepts that were came out of Southern California in the mid-1970s for a school shooting that was a drive-by shooting, not an active shooter inside a facility.
So how do you deal with an active shooter inside a facility, especially, as you say, somebody who has the right to be in that facility?
One of the things you want to get people to realize is we took tactics with us, you know, as youngsters we're trained in fire response, and that those tactics are portable no matter where you are, whether you're an adult or a child or a grocery store or at a house of worship in an educational facility or in business. Teaching concepts that are portable through every facility in the United States, regardless of what it is, lockdown still kind of part of the response, but actually, especially Alice has been saying that the actual preferred response for at least the last 15 years is evacuation of the facility. That's recently been supported by documents that came out from the federal government in 2013.
And Alice is the training institute that you're involved with that trains personnel in schools and workplaces to deal with situations like this. But what do you mean evacuate? If somebody starts shooting in the next room over, am I supposed to just get up and walk out the door?
No, one of the things we do is train people how to evacuate a facility, and we look at each facility individually. What are the evacuation routes? We try to get people to think outside the box about not going into a hallway, that windows are just doors waiting to happen. How do you evacuate based on sound, what people around you are doing? All those things come into play during the training in order to make a good decision about evacuation. It's not just – shouldn't it be a pell-mell evacuation out of a facility. It should be based on a decision-making process. You know, pretty much the same way we do for a fire. If there's a fire in a certain location in the building, obviously we're not going that way.
Is there ever a case to be made for staying put, for hiding under the desk?
I wouldn't say hiding under the desk, but there is a case to be made for as a secondary response to stay inside a facility. You know, if you don't know if you can evacuate or your circumstances don't allow you to evacuate because of where the threat is inside a building, then the secondary response is to go to, you know, a lockdown barricade of a facility where, you know, you use environmental items to secure doors. We teach people how to use those environmental items, what that looks like in a classroom or an office setting, in a church. All of those things, the concepts need to be portable so you have the thought process from one location to the next, what you're going to actually use in those locations in order to barricade a door. How do you tie locks off on a door? How do you tie arms off on a door and get them to think that way?
I was reading the account of somebody who was in the facility yesterday in San Bernardino who was in contact with her mother, who told her to go back into the room, close the door, turn off the lights, and be quiet. And I'm wondering to myself, can you text 911, for example, instead of calling and making noise?
Usually texting 911 is not an option. Usually you have to call 911. We do tell people it's a good idea you know, to keep your phone line open, at least if you need to text somebody, to at least get information to law enforcement. We don't really have that technology online yet where we can use texting for 911 calls. That's something we're going to probably end up looking at here in the future as a nation as we continue to have these events grow.
And if you're stuck in the building, should you wait for the authorities to come and get you out? How do you know when it's okay to leave?
You know, one of the things we work with law enforcement and civilians is to train them how to have contact with each other. That's something that we've pretty much ignored in the past. A lot of people are afraid to open doors even when law enforcement shows up.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we've taught people is that they're hiding in facilities in which every room is occupied. And if you just turn out the lights and shut the door and be very quiet, you apparently turn invisible. And that's a concept that we've been teaching. That's not true. Most of these individuals know where their targets are. You know, I was talking with one of the people here in your facility in Washington. Every room in this building is occupied during the day. Just by turning off the lights and being very quiet doesn't mean they're still not occupied. And because most of the threats actually belong in the facility, they pretty much know where everyone is.
What about a more random situation like the attacks that we just saw in Paris, where people are just outside at a cafe and somebody comes along and shoots? Is there any way to protect yourself from something like that?
You know, the best thing to do in that type of incident is to create distance. Shooting is a skill level, and it requires a lot of skill in order to shoot accurately. Chaos in the first moments of these incidents actually works in our favor. The bad guy actually wants to control the facility and control the people. One of the things about lockdown is it actually gets the people bunched up in a corner of a room or in a room itself and actually gives control of the facility to the bad guys. What we want is a lot of movement, a lot of noise, a lot of chaos. I always tell people, if you make a room or a facility look like Chuck E. Cheese, that actually works in your favor.
Hmm. What do you think of how everything was handled yesterday in San Bernardino?
You know, just from what I've seen on the news, I think they did an excellent job. I have a good friend of mine. Her husband works for San Bernardino in the sheriff's office. And from what I saw, there was an excellent job done at that facility. Very quick response, about 4 minutes. That's actually one of the fastest law enforcement responses ever to one of these incidents. On average, it's usually 5 or 6 minutes, sometimes more, depending on your location in the U.S. So they arrived on scene very quick. They actually tracked down the suspects rather quickly and neutralized them quite effectively. So I think they did an excellent job out there.
Was there anything that the people who were in that building could have done to protect themselves?
You know, without actually knowing what went on inside the facility, it's hard to say at this point. Without having a layout of the facility, where the people were contacted, what was the location of the contact, you know, what was available to them, how much training they actually had. One of the things that bothers me as an instructor and as an expert in the field is that we've actually been training people for over 20 years to lay on the ground, not move, and be quiet, regardless of their circumstance, and they'll use that tactic even if they're in contact. So it's one of the things we're trying to change in the U.S.
That's Lieutenant Joe Hendry with the Kent State Police Department. He's an intelligence liaison with Ohio Homeland Security and a national instructor with the ALICE Training Institute, which trains people to plan for active shooter situations. Lieutenant, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jeremy.